In the wake of his resignation, the typical political scandal narrative swirled around Gerald Butts.
A political stunner from Ottawa, one of the Prime Minister's most trusted advisers and longtime friend, Gerald Butts, has resigned amid allegations the Prime Minister's office interfered to help Quebec engineering giant SNC-Lavalin avoid a criminal prosecution.
In a statement, Butts flat out denied any wrongdoing, saying that the allegations have become a distraction from the Prime Minister and the government's work, so he's stepping aside.
Except Gerry Butts isn't your typical political staffer resignation. Not at all. As much as this move will dominate headlines all week, and of course it indicates that the SNC-Lavalin scandal is probably going to get a lot worse before it gets better, the most interesting story from this is about a breakup. You see, Justin Trudeau has never won anything without Gerry Butts. And now he's got an election in 8 months, and Butts walked away from his partner and his friend at the time he was needed more than ever. So why? Who is the man that every insider on the Hill has used as an unnamed source at one point or another? How much of Justin Trudeau's policy came from him? What will the Prime Minister of Canada do now without his right-hand man? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Paul Wells is a senior writer at Maclean's. He knows more about the personal relationships at play in politics than anybody on Parliament Hill. Paul, who is Gerald Butts?
He was, until Monday night, the Prime Minister's principal secretary, which is a job title that can have many meanings over time. He was the Prime Minister's right hand.
Right.
And he was the Prime Minister's right hand since long before he was the Prime Minister. He co-managed the campaign in 2015. He went to McGill University with Justin Trudeau in the 90s, and they've been nearly inseparable ever since then. I mean, I was hearing rumors, guesswork from people who knew the both of them better than I did nearly 20 years ago. Justin Trudeau wants to be Prime Minister. Gerry Butts wants to make it happen.
And he did it. And then he walked away.
Yeah. There have been rumors around town that Gerry Butts doesn't have his heart in the job as much lately as he had. Those rumors are from before Christmas, from last autumn. And so to some extent, his resignation is not a huge surprise. This is not somebody who was in the middle of new adventures and was looking forward to the next great accomplishment. There was a sense that Butts has been a little listless and not as deeply engaged with files as he had been for a long time.
That's kind of interesting, because the first thing that everybody went to is the timing and the relationship to the scandal. But you're saying that that this might have been brewing for some time.
Well, I mean, it's pretty clear that the scandal has something to do with it. But it's easier to get someone to give up on a job if they have already been toying with the idea, you know. And a lot of, quite reasonably, a lot of the speculation or a lot of the reaction to the announcement of Gerald Butts' resignation was people saying, well, look, if he's done nothing wrong, then why is he quitting? If there's no fire, then why all this smoke? And I think it's possible, we'll find out, but that the resignation was kind of an expression of, look, to hell with this. I don't need this. I made my best friend the Prime Minister. He's been Prime Minister for 3 years. I was at all the meetings. I was at that dinner with Barack Obama. Off I go, you know? There's still way more unanswered than answered questions around this SNC-Lavalin business. So I'm hesitant to speculate with great certainty, but that's a working supposition I have.
What was, to the best of your knowledge, or people around the Hill anyway, what was their working relationship like? How close were they? I mean, I know they were really good friends, but how did it work between them?
Important decisions were made by the Prime Minister, his Chief of Staff, Katie Telford, and his Principal Secretary, Gerald Butts, all three of them together in meetings that they would have a few times a day. And, you know, sometimes the circle would be extended. There's probably 10 or a dozen people who would be make frequent appearances at those meetings. But if they were all in the same city together, then Telford or Butts would never be absent from those big decision meetings. They were at least as necessary to the process as was the Prime Minister, maybe more.
Who is he as a guy? If you spent any time with him, you hung out with him, do you remember the first time you met him?
I don't remember the first time I met him, but I'll tell you, an early extended bit of time I spent with him was on a big Navy boat in the Arctic for a week in probably 2008. Why the hell did that happen? Because Stephen Harper would have the Canadian Forces do annual sovereignty patrols in Arctic waters.
Right.
And I was interested in that as a journalist who was covering Stephen Harper. Gerald Butts at that point was the head of the World Wildlife Federation for Canada. And he was interested in it for climate change reasons. And so I asked the Harbor PMO, would you put me on this boat? And when I got there, Jerry Butts was there. And so he and I spent a week on the deck of a Canadian Navy boat in the Arctic looking at icebergs.
And what was he like? What struck you about him?
He's a low-key. He's not emotionally demonstrative. He is friendly to everybody he encounters. He is not nearly as sort of confrontational and abrasive in person as he is on Twitter, where he's very active.
Right. And
where, you know, since long before the 2015 election, every night he would cheerfully correct journalists on his perception of the flaws in their reporting and analysis, which is when he and I had a bit of a falling out. But in person, he seeks agreement rather than confrontation. He doesn't pull rank particularly. He doesn't say, you know, look, I'm with Justin Trudeau and you're not. His competitive advantage and his strengths comes from the fact that when everyone else leaves, he's in the room. Told recently, he was in the room with the Liberal leader, with the Prime Minister. And so he gets the last say. But in the moment, he's not a guy who looks for fights.
There's been a ton of discussion since he resigned about him kind of being the man behind the curtain when it comes to Justin Trudeau. Do you have a sense of how much power he wielded there, and how much of Trudeau's actions kind of came from him, or is that just kind of the typical stereotype?
People tend to exaggerate the roles of lieutenants. If for people who are supporters or members of a government, it's a way to criticize the leader without criticizing the leader. You criticize the people around him. And for opponents of the government, it is a handy way to make it look like the prime minister has staffed himself up with monsters. I've seen it happen many times with conservative and liberal prime ministers. People used to claim that Stephen Harper was remote controlled by a University of Calgary prof named Tom Flanagan. And then for the last 7 years that Harper was prime minister, he was well known that he wasn't even speaking to Tom Flanagan because he was angry at him. Turns out he didn't need the supposed Svengali who was controlling him. Similarly, look, I expect that Justin Trudeau will be able to function as prime minister for the rest of this calendar year without Gerald Butts around. But even people in the government, even people whose future was bound up with Justin Trudeau's continued electoral success, would complain about the extent to which big decisions didn't get made until Jerry Butts got around to getting his eye on the file and making decisions. This government is not super fast at making decisions. And since the beginning, a large part of the perceived reason for that is that Jerry Butts and or Katie Telford have to personally sign off on every important decision. And so there was just this huge bottleneck. It was not a decentralized. When it came to power, Justin Trudeau announced that that cabinet, government by cabinet, was back. In other words, ministers would have power to make their own decisions. Everything I hear says that hasn't been true.
You've covered a lot of governments. Do you have a sense of how rare it is for it to be structured that way and decisions to get made like that?
It is. Everyone complains about excessive power in the prime minister's office. Ian Brody, who was the chief of staff to Stephen Harper for a while, has written a really interesting book that outlines all the reasons why that kind of needs to be the case, why the important decisions have to go through the PMO. But, I mean, there could be six or eight people who make those decisions. The definition of what is a decision so important that it has to go through the PMO could and does change from government to government. And the combination of very elevated executive decision-making power in the hands of the prime minister's two principal lieutenants and the very close personal relationship. It's not unprecedented, but it's very novel. I mean, Jean Chrétien's chief of staff was a guy named Jean Peltier, former mayor of Quebec City. Chrétien and Peltier went to Cégep together, you know, in the Stone Age. And so there have been cases where a personal relationship translates to a functional relationship in office. But Harper was not buddies with any of his chiefs of staff. So it's a bit of a pendulum, and it can go both ways.
Do we have a sense yet of what Trudeau's going to do without him? And I don't mean that in the sense of, like, of course he'll miss him because they're longtime friends. But who's going to fill that decision-making void?
There are already rumors. One gets the impression. So Brian Mulroney would reach out into the corporate world for people he barely knew and bring them in to carry important functional responsibilities in his PMO. But that was unusual. It's with Trudeau, who's much more of a high emotional intelligence guy, someone for whom his personal rapport with the people he works with is important. It's much likelier to be somebody he knows very well. And that's just that it would be somebody like David McNaughton, who's currently the ambassador to Washington, Canada's ambassador to Washington, but was a key Liberal campaign figure before that. And because they've gone through rescuing NAFTA together, Trudeau's office and McNaughton working very close together, He's the kind of guy that Trudeau would have a personal comfort level with and who would have the kind of authority within the party that he could implement the kind of change that this party is starting to desperately need as it heads into an election. That's not guaranteed, but, you know, McNaughton kind of fits the police sketch of who has to replace Jerry Butts.
If Trudeau does pull off the election in October, will this be his first significant victory without Butts behind him?
Yeah, I mean, I suspect that Justin Trudeau was keeping a low profile in the 90s at McGill, so he didn't run for student council. But if he had, Jerry Butts would have been his campaign manager. They've known each other since Frosh Week at McGill, and this would be the first time Trudeau's had to go without him.
What kind of reputation does Butts have around Ottawa with politicians from other parties?
It was interesting how many former Conservative staffers to Stephen Harper were quick to sing Jerry Butts' praises when he resigned. I think a lot of distracted partisans who aren't really in the game dislike Jerry Butts because he's mean to Conservative on Twitter. But just about anyone who's interacted with him comes away with a largely nice feeling about the guy. Everyone hates their opponents, but Jerry Butts did not make it his business to be disagreeable. And I was struck by how many senior Conservatives said, look, I like the guy.
It's kind of weird that he would leave. And I know we're not going to speculate, but I mean, just if a guy is your best friend all the way back to Frosh Week to take off the week that he seems to need people to have his back the most certainly seems very strange.
Yeah, but eventually, like even the Beatles broke up, right? Winston Marsalis's brother Branford left to go play with Sting. If you're a jazz fan, like at some point, everyone becomes a solo act.
I think it's amazing you just put a jazz reference right into this podcast.
That's how I roll.
Is this a sign of how bad this scandal has gotten for the Liberals? Because it seemed we covered it when it started to break, and it sort of felt like this insider political baseball that we had to explain so that people could understand it and be informed. But it seemed like it would kind of stay very esoteric and complex. And now it just seems to be exploding every day.
I still am trying to wrap my head around how much trouble the Liberals are in for how little comprehensible information.
Yeah.
Normally, I mean, when the Mike Duffy mess was making real trouble for the Conservatives, Bob Fyfe was working at CTV, and he was leading the national news night after night after night after night with new revelations. Now Bob's at the Globe. He's written one story, and 10 days later, they're still picking up pieces of their teeth off the ground. And there's been no follow up. Like we don't have new information since that first story. I mean, this story, large parts of it, of which the Liberals could explain, like, you know, why were they meeting with lobbyists to discuss essentially a plea bargain for SNC-Lavalin? There's a reason for that. They could give that reason. And yet they've just been rung like a bell by this story in a way that is novel and kind of fascinating to watch.
That was going to be my next question, is how much of this is self-inflicted? It just seems like a whole bunch of own goals.
You know, before the 2015 election, a senior member of the Liberal campaign staff got in trouble, a guy named Dan Gagne, very senior Liberal operative from way back. He had been chief of staff to David Peterson as Ontario premier. He had been chief of staff to Jean Charest as Quebec premier. And then, kind of stupidly, he wrote a letter to his business clients telling them how they could benefit from a Liberal government before one of those had been elected. And he had to walk away. But I remember noticing at the time, the first reaction that the Trudeau entourage had was, what's your problem? Why is this even a story? We're the good guys. Why are you bugging us? And I thought, aha, that looks like it's a baked-in instinct of this group. They don't realize that trouble is trouble. They start off thinking that trouble is a cynical press messing with them, or, you know, and that lag, that few days it takes before a stronger self-defense instinct kicks in, that can kill you. And as with Dan Gagne, so with Carol Butts and the whole process around this SNC-Lavalin thing, the Liberals, I think, still to this day, don't think they need to explain themselves. They're still hoping they can process their way out of this. They're still telling one another that everyone's being mean to them. And it's messing with their timing, and it's messing with their response.
Does it seem like they have a plan at all? This seems like the first move they've actually made in a few days that moved forward.
Well, they had a very long cabinet meeting on Tuesday, and they came out with several surprises. Jody Wilson-Raybould, who has resigned from cabinet, attended that cabinet meeting and apparently spoke to cabinet at the prime minister's request. The new justice minister, David Lametti, said that he has been tasked by the prime minister with looking for case law and precedent that would allow Jody Wilson-Raybould to speak about what she experienced as attorney general, and so on and so on. It looks like the Liberals are trying to reconcile, rebuild the team. I'd be a little surprised if the goal is not to get Jody Wilson-Raybould back into the federal cabinet. There's a belated recognition that she's not an ordinary MP. She's got strong Indigenous support that the Liberals need if they're going to be credible on that file. And so I think that we're beginning to see the signs of a rational response perilously late after Jerry Butts has already walked away 10 days into this mess.
Was the Jerry Butts resignation or exit just kind of the price that had to be paid at this point after 10 days of scandal?
And I don't believe in fate. I think everything is contingent and there were other ways to play this. But this is the scale at which politics happens. Every prime minister faces a serious national unity crisis. I mean, this happens on the same day that a convoy of trucks protesting the government's energy policy has arrived from Alberta. Every prime minister faces wrecked friendships and serious personal grief. It's a hard job. That's why we test our political leaders so severely before electorates decide they get to be prime minister. And Trudeau, who's led a bit of a charmed existence until now, is learning what all of his predecessors could have told him, which is there'll be days when you hate this job.
I'm going to ask you the same question we asked Cormac McSweeney when we had him on to explain this last week. Mm-hmm. Do you think we're still talking about SNC-Lavalin in the 2 weeks leading up to the vote in October?
Yeah, I think so, in one way or another. And it's not as though this is an easy issue for the Conservatives either. I mean, in the rest of the country, this is about big companies buying influence. In Quebec, it's about why is everyone being so mean to a company that is the pride of Quebec, that employs thousands of Canadians. And the Conservatives are going to be whipsawed by that, too. But the cost that's already been inflicted against the Liberals is so high that I don't think this issue goes away. Just as Nigel Wright had resigned as Stephen Harper's chief of staff many months before an election, but that was still what everyone wanted to talk about during the campaign.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
Paul Wells is a senior writer at Maclean's. That was The Big Story. For more from us, you can visit us at thebigstorypodcast.ca or at frequencypodcastnetwork.com. You can find us on social media at The Big Story FPN and at Frequency Pods. We're also at Frequency Pods on Facebook and on Instagram. You can shoot us an idea for an episode or just tell us what you think. And you can do that on any podcast platform you prefer, on Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, Acast, Overcast, Pocket Casts. I'm running out of them. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.